we've looked at what do you expect from the sources to find out about Jesus. Now I want to ask you, what do you expect of yourself? And I don't want to exclude myself from that. What do I need to do to be able to read the gospel? Really important. Knowledge is a union of knower and known. We're real fond of blaming people out there for what we do, aren't we? But a lot of it's got to do with me. I can only know to the extent that I'm open to knowledge. So I'm going to ask you tonight, spend tonight with you if you're willing to. You can always sneak out of half time if you're not. To ask yourself this really critical question. What is required of me if I want seriously to find the answer, the truthful answer to the question, who is Jesus? Let me begin by referring you again to that lovely statement made by Irenaeus. Those of you who weren't here last week, Irenaeus was born in Smyrna and as a little boy listened to Polycarp, who was a disciple of John the Evangelist. So we're only two steps away from Jesus. And this little kid, don't know where he came in the family, eventually became a bishop and was shunted over to Lyon, at the Rhone River, we decided. And he made this lovely statement when he was disturbed by people in his environment who were speaking about Jesus, answering the question we've asked, but answering it and missing the meaning of Jesus. They were doing what that word beautifully expresses, heretic. The Greek word heresis is a selection. They were selecting aspects of Jesus that suited them, but Irenaeus was saying, no, that's not what I learned from Polycarp. That's not what Mum and Dad taught me. And it wasn't just what they taught him, it was what everybody he knew was saying. And here's this group saying, Jesus is this, and he's saying, oh, wait a minute, hold it. And he wrote this book against these people. Lovely book if you want to get round and read what we've got left of it, unfortunately not terribly much. It includes that colossal statement. The glory of God, he said, to people who were using religion to get into pride and esoteric little groups that knew all the answers. And he said, hey, the glory of God is a person fully alive. Who taught him that but Jesus? And full human living is to see God. My question to you then tonight is, how do you become and remain fully alive so that there's a chance that you'll see God? How does a person stay a human being and journey in this desire for authentic knowledge, including now the knowledge of Jesus? First examination of conscience begins now. And I want you to check every little bit of this by your own self-awareness. If it doesn't make sense to you, it's probably not right, but I'm really confident in it. So there's another alternative, and that is that you're not thinking, you know what I mean? I want you to get really in touch with, because it's all meant to be simple material. Let's check it out. First thing anybody has to do to come to knowledge is to be attentive to your experience. To be attentive to what you experience and to be attentive to yourself experiencing it. There's a two poles, aren't there, of experience. Attend to you and attend to myself attending to you. To know what's going on inside and outside, if I may put it in very simple terms. Do you think this is true? There exists in every one of you in this room a spontaneous, dynamic drive moving you to experience people and things and situations. Look at a baby and you get it. It's into everything, into the tomato juice and it just wants to know. It's got its head inside the dog's mouth checking out the uvula because it just wants to explore, to see, to touch, to taste and to smell. Okay, it happens in a baby. When you see it in a teenager, it's lovely because by the time you're a teenager, it can stop happening if you're not careful, if you're hurt too much or you can get bored, you know, stuck at school or something, whatever. And when you see this quality in an old person, doesn't your heart leap with joy? Here you've got an old person who still wants to see and taste and touch and be in touch and explore the world. It's a wonderful quality to, and those who are fortunate physically and I suppose health-wise to be able to do it is one thing, but a lot of us don't do it. It's nothing to do with health. It's to do with this down here, which I'll come to in a moment. This spontaneous desire that seems to be there in movement, to be interested, to be sensitive, to be attentive to yourself and to the objects around you, is there, I believe. Check it in yourself. But also, it's possible to be not interested. It's possible to be insensitive. It's possible to be inattentive. How do you feel? I don't know, I've never looked. Yeah. What are you thinking? Oh. Well, what is it? What's the leaf on a rose look like? I hope I'm blushing because I'm not absolutely sure. I've got a fairly vague idea, but how many of us look? I often envy my mother's education. Her father was a school teacher in one of those one people schools. Mum's now 83 and talks about her failing, you know, how she's getting old and forgetting things, and she's still three times ahead of anyone in our family. She didn't hand it on too well, I don't think. But something happened in her teaching that was just marvellous because she was trained to do these things. We can not be like that, can't we? You can be not like it here. People can go to a classroom and sit there and not listen. You can go through the world and not see. You can be out of touch and so on. The reason is interestingly contained in the very word itself. Experience. Is it too low to see? I'll put it up a bit. Experience. Look at the word. P-E-R. It's exactly the same word as peril. You up, which comes from the word, if you're interested in etymology, fair, F-A-R-E. The F goes into the P, you know, as the language tends to grow. So, farewell, you say to someone. How are you faring? Seafare, warfare, and so on. Fair means journey. And it's obvious that a journey is perilous. It's so obvious that the word experience holds that peril in it. Because you're leaving home, you're leaving what you're accustomed to, you're leaving securities in journeying out somewhere. And that's why I think we tend, fear can sometimes cause us to close the door and the window of our mind and heart and just not live. I won't labour this point because I think it's obvious. And we can live in a world that's dominated. Not just these things just don't exist, but it dominates us. Our undifferentiated feelings. One of the most obvious examples of this that occur to me is the teenage, the typical, it's not typical teenage, but the teenage going to a pop concert. And everyone's going, and you say to them, what's the song? I don't know. They don't know what the song is, really. They don't know any of the words. They're not listening, nor are they singing, but this person is hyper, and so I get hyped up, and we're all hyped up, but if you ask anybody, what are you excited about? You might get an answer, but a lot of it wouldn't get an answer. And I don't mean just teenage thing. It happens at all stages of our life. We can get caught up in a psychic contagion thing, or in just fatigue, boredom, a state that's in here. We can be caught up in our drives of hunger or sexual desire or the need to dominate, and we're being dominated by feelings, and but it's not, we're neither seeing clearly nor aware of what's going on when we perceive. To conclude that first and simplest point I want to make, check these for yourself and ask about them later if they don't seem right to you, or make comments on them. Necessarily, our experiences have to be limited because we're limited human beings, of course. And in fact, we'll have to select. You just don't open yourself to every blooming experience. That's kind of silly. So we have to select, but we have to select by criteria that are sensible, not just based on fear, perhaps. But the only point I'm making here is that when we select an experience to go to a lecture on a Tuesday night, or to go to Mass on Sunday, or to a million other experiences that you select, or when something happens to you, you're sick, you're disturbed, someone says something hurtful to you, I'm just suggesting to you that there's no substitute for holding that experience, depthing it, and being attentive to it. Otherwise, it just passes me by, and I end up being an object for what other people say and do, but I'm not there to experience it. We are never going to learn, and the first task of any education and the first discipline of any learning, I think you could say, is to be attentive, to tune up your antennae so that you are truly in touch with reality, even when it hurts, and even when it's a celebration. And if you and I can help each other grow into people that can celebrate our existence at depth and at height and length and breadth, as Paul says, then we're doing each other a mighty favour. Okay, let me now move on to something a little more, a little deeper perhaps. The second requirement of me and of you in any learning process, and I'll apply it more accurately now to what we're doing, is this, and again, would you please examine your consciousness on it, to think about your experiences, to seek to understand them, or to seek for insight is another way to put it, to look for meaning. That's the idea. Now let me suggest this to you. Do you find in yourself that there's a spontaneous, dynamic drive? I mean, it's natural to you. It's just spontaneous. It's there, part of being a human being, to inquire and wonder. Again, live with a two-year-old and you know what I mean. What? Why? Where? Who? Crikey, your brain just about fallen off because of all these questions hurled at you by this tiny little creature that can hardly walk. Because a creature has a spontaneous need to want to understand and meaning and so on. We have this spontaneous drive to seek answers to our questions. But it's going to require discipline. Some questions come, answers come readily. You can find out quite easily. What do you do when the answer doesn't come readily? What does your child do when the answer doesn't come readily? Maybe the question is beyond the child, and so we've got to be sensible, but say it's quite appropriate. You get disappointed, don't you, when the child or the young person or the old person gets a little bit along the way and then, the question doesn't matter anymore, and you rather go swimming. I'd rather sunbathe than climb the mountain kind of thing. Well, there's a place for both, but do you persevere? Are you willing to be disciplined yourself? Am I willing to live with a question till an answer emerges, to stay with the problem till you get insight into it? Or am I going to be distracted from it and just chuff off to the next experience? Or just get someone else's answer and that'll do, make it mine without thinking? Am I willing to persevere patiently? Have I got the humility to realize I don't know and to ask? Or am I going to live behind a mask? And the beauty of what we're talking about here, you all know what I mean. It's what we call insight. And once you have it, you know what it is. You ask a question and get an answer, and you know how joyful you feel. You think, oh, God, that's what it's about, you know. Oh, that's what he was saying. And your mind and heart and being just leaps because you've seen and understood something. If that's not what's happening, you haven't got an insight yet. But look at the alternatives, and they're pretty terrible and pretty common and very human, aren't they? It's possible to dissipate energy and live a distracted existence. 2SM means St. Mary's, I understand. No, it doesn't. It means St. Mark's. That's right, Drummoyne. At any rate, 2SM is a station that's got some affiliation with a certain church that I won't mention. Listen to it. Listen to advertising, which you do, don't you? I don't want to say there's an enormous plot going on, but there's a whole lot of people who are interested in my not thinking. Because if I think, I won't buy it, will I? So they've got to somehow stop me thinking to get in the impulses to make me buy, or whatever. I'm just using one simple example. It's terribly easy to jump from one distraction to the other, to go from one experience to the other without ever really understanding them. And if we do that to our young people, we're criminals. And we do it to our young people as an adult world. Most of our society is built on being terribly pessimistic, and I don't want to be particularly, but there's a lot of forces in my and your world that are all about not thinking, just rolling on to the next experience. But it's never an experience that's depthed and held and integrated. We can lapse into a stupor, and we've got a wonderful word for that in English. It's the word stupid. And it means you're living in a stupor. Mind is vacant or oppressed or pushed under, but not alert. We can substitute statements for understanding. And catechisms are terrible, dangerous instruments like that for doing that. I'm not knocking catechisms particularly, but that's what they can do. The catechism can tell you who God is before you've even wondered. The catechism, and not just the catechism, teachers can give you answers to questions you've never asked. What's happening? Your mind is being filled with answer, but no insight, because you haven't asked the question. So you haven't said, oh, God, is that what it is? Great. No, you've said, oh, I'll learn that off, pass an exam with it. You can repeat answers without thinking. I don't hope I'm not putting anyone down in this room. I'm actually revealing my own terrible habits, but I presumed I'm a bit like all of you, that we're all a bit the same in this. Let's look at theology as an example of this. That's how Thomas Aquinas defined theology, which is what we'll be doing for the next 18 weeks. It's the faith experience seeking understanding. What is love? And then one, you get little bits of understanding. You think, oh, is that what love is? Now, who is Jesus? And you get an insight. You think, oh, is that it? It's not everything, but it's an insight. Some meaning has come into it. Why does the church seem to be so keen on Mass on Sunday? Now, there'd be thousands of adults in Sydney, I bet you, who'd have no answer to that question. The answer would be, oh, because it is. No, it's not that. I'm not going to give you the answer now in case you don't know. And keep you primed up to find out. But there are answers, and they're fantastic answers. And people have had insights into it, and that's why they say, hey, no, it's really important. And if you can't say it's important, well, then maybe it isn't. Maybe they were wrong, but maybe they were right, and you never knew why. And that's tragic, isn't it? Because the answers are, I think, fairly beautiful answers. So theology is not a list of propositions that don't give insight and don't convey meaning. People say the Trinity, there's a good example. They say, oh, you never understand the Trinity, it's a mystery. The Trinity isn't a mystery, God is a mystery. The Trinity should be a clear statement about a mystery. The Trinity should be a partial and clear statement about something that's really enormously wonderful. And for transubstantiation, people say, oh, you don't understand transubstantiation, it's a mystery. Transubstantiation isn't a mystery. The real presence of the living, risen Christ in the Blessed Eucharist is a mystery, just like love's a mystery and pain's a mystery and beauty's a mystery and everything that we value is mysterious, meaning our mind can't comprehend it. But transubstantiation once was a fantastic insight into it that had people leaping round the Sorbonne University and the University of Paris, jumping up and down saying, "This is fantastic, good on you, Thomas Aquinas." And Thomas was, you know, kind of sat there and took the compliments that he could reach. He was a fairly enormous fellow. But that's how people were responding to it, because you got all these heavies at the university saying, "Oh, poo, 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 blah, 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 blah." And Thomas Aquinas, who knew his philosophy better than they did, the exciting philosophy that was leaping through the university of Aristotle, worked out a way of explaining, not explaining the mystery, of giving insight into the mystery through that lovely word that he came up with, transubstantiation. And it was the rage. Can you believe it? Can you imagine that becoming the rage at the University of New South Wales? And it was the rage. Now, that's what theology is. And you're doing it all day long. You're doing it every time you get an insight into your faith. And the best things that you can teach and that I can teach, in fact, I'm inclined to say the only things you can teach are those things which you have learned. Those things which are insights for you. The rest you humbly say, "Well, there's a lot more to it, but I don't know what it's about yet. Go and see somebody, he'll tell you if he knows." You know, but what you know is really important. Okay. If propositions express someone else's insight, then we need to ask, what is the insight? Not what's the proposition, not what did the Council of Trent say, but what did they mean when they said it? Do you take the difference? What questions were they answering when they said that? What were they denying by that statement? That's the real question. Because then you get into the grist of the debate that led to that proposition, that statement. What were the people at the Council of Chalcedon objecting to when they made this statement? What does Matthew mean when he calls Jesus the Son of God? Is a fantastically interesting question. And that's the kind of question we've got to keep in our mind, because it's not enough to say, "Oh, Matthew called Jesus Son of God." Now, you know what you mean by Son of God, you probably don't. But let's say you do, or you think you do, or I think I do. And then you see it in Matthew and say, "There it is." Did Matthew mean what you mean? Can't presume it, can you? You've got to find out. And if he did, then your ideas are in touch with Matthew's. If he didn't, you might have something to learn, and I might have, from what Matthew meant. So it's a search for honest understanding of people's powerful statements about things that meant something to them. What meaning might that have in relation to questions people are asking today? How can that meaning be expressed now? Is the art of the catechist and the teacher and the preacher and the mother and the father and anyone who wants to talk about meaning? Otherwise, we hand on to our children wineskins that we've never tasted. They're probably empty. But it's the wine that you want, isn't it? I mean, give me a choice, I'd go for the wine, not the wineskin. I mean, who wants a bottle except to put flowers in it or something? It's the wine of the revelation and the wine of meaning and the wine of celebration that feeds us. And that's what we're handing on. That's what catches when faith catches. Don't let us, by failing to think, simply hand on intact, comfortable, traditional, maybe empty phrases. The two points that I've made with you so far are, in your journey and mine, to answer any question, I think this is to do with the whole of life now, but precisely gearing it to this, I need to have my antennae tuned and not be too, I might be afraid of experience, but I've got to go on with it and live with it. Secondly, having experienced attentively by listening and seeing and touching and tasting and smelling and feeling, I then have to think about that experience. Take time to depth it. Take time to be there in it. And don't allow others, or my own stupidity, to let me just waste time, spill it all over the place, by just going from here to here to here to here. And in 10 years' time, if someone says, "What have you done?" You haven't done anything, but a hell of a lot of things have happened to you. But you were never there. You missed it. You didn't depth it. You didn't say it. You weren't in touch with it. You know, it's a tragic, isn't it? And if you did for all your life, well, it's really pathetic. And if I'm doing it, and any of you, my friends in the room notice me doing it, please tell me, because life's too beautiful to do that to us, isn't it? We've got to be in touch.